Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. In just a few seconds, we're going to join C-SPAN. Congressman Dennis Kucinich is live on the floor of the House of Representatives right now, introducing 35 articles of impeachment against George W. Bush. Bob Furtick, who is the president of Democrats.com, issued this statement, quote, "We've waited 7 years to find one member of Congress brave enough to stand up for our Constitution, for which generations of Americans have fought and died. We're thrilled and honored that Dennis Kucinich has chosen to be that one genuine patriot. We congratulate him on his historic leadership and pledge to do everything in our power to persuade Congress to adopt all 35 articles and put George W. Bush on trial before the Senate of the United States, exactly as the Founding Fathers wanted." Let's join some of this live right now.
Prophet. Continuing to quote from the report by the Government Oversight Committee, even after the administration claimed it was awarding Iraq contracts competitively in early 2004, real price competition was missing. Iraq was divided geographically and by economic sector into a handful of fiefdoms. Individual contractors were then awarded monopoly contracts for all the work within given fiefdoms. Because these monopoly contracts were awarded before specific projects were identified, there was no actual price competition for more than 2,000 contracts. Continuing to quote, "In the absence of price competition, rigorous government oversight becomes essential for accountability. Yet the administration turned much of the contract oversight work over to private companies with blatant conflicts of interest. Oversight contractors saw their business partners, and in some cases oversaw their business partners." I want to go over that again. "Oversight contractors oversaw their business partners, and in some cases were placed in a position to assist their own construction work under separate monopoly construction contracts." Continuing to quote from the report, "Under Halliburton's two largest Iraq contracts, Pentagon auditors found $1 billion in questioned costs and over $400 million in unsupported costs. Former Halliburton employees testified that the company charged $45 for cases of soda, billed $100 to clean 15-pound bags of laundry, and insisted in housing its staff at the five-star Kempinski Hotel in Kuwait. Halliburton truck drivers testified that the company torched brand-new $85,000 trucks rather than perform relatively minor repairs and regular maintenance. Halliburton procurement officials described the company's informal motto in Iraq as, 'Don't worry about price, it's cost plus.' A Halliburton manager was indicted for major fraud against the United States for allegedly billing more than $5.5 billion for work that should have cost only $685,000 in exchange for a $1 million kickback from a Kuwaiti subcontractor. The Air Force found that another U.S. government contractor, Custer Battles, set up shell subcontractors to inflate prices. Those overcharges were passed along to the U.S. government under the company's cost-plus contract to provide security for Baghdad International Airport. In one case, the company allegedly took Iraqi-owned forklifts, repainted them, and then leased them to the United States government. Continuing to quote from the report, despite the spending of billions of taxpayer dollars, U.S. reconstruction efforts in key sectors of the Iraq economy are failing. Over 2 years after the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, oil and electricity production has fallen below pre-war levels. The administration has failed to even measure how many Iraqis lack access to drinkable water. It's the end of quote from that report. Constitution in Crisis, a book by Congressman John Conyers, details the Bush administration's response when contract abuse is made public. Quote, Bunatine Greenhouse was the chief contracting officer at the Army Corps of Engineers, the agency that has managed much of the reconstruction work in Iraq. In October 2004, Ms. Greenhouse came forward and revealed that top Pentagon officials showed improper favoritism to Halliburton when awarding military contracts to Halliburton's subsidiary, Kellogg, Brown, and Root. Greenhouse stated that when the Pentagon awarded Halliburton...
This is Dennis Kucinich on the floor of the U.S. House right now. We're going to rejoin this a couple of times tonight. He is introducing 35 articles of impeachment against these criminal sons of bitches in the Bush administration, George Bush and Dick Cheney. Bob Furtick at Democrats.com said some might question why Congressman Kucinich has done this now. My question, Furtick says, is why 434 other members of Congress have not done it before. Despite the uncountable and unspeakable crimes this administration has committed, George Bush and Dick Cheney remain in power and immune from a prosecution. Congress must impeach Bush and Cheney now before they further abuse their power by pardoning for all of their crimes, by Bush pardoning all of them. Now, David Swanson, who is the Washington director of Democrats.com and the creator of ImpeachCheney.org, and he's also the co-founder of AfterDowningStreet.org, said, quote, Congressman Kucinich is the first, but we will be pressuring all 434 other representatives to join him. We must act to prevent an attack on Iran and to establish the rule of law for future administrations. Swanson goes on, Bush has had many accomplices, first and foremost Vice President Dick Cheney, but our founders created a single executive precisely so that we could hold that one person accountable for the actions of the executive branch. It's high time we did so, and millions of Americans will be urging their representatives to support the effort being led by Congressman Kucinich. And it goes on, Swanson says when Diane Sawyer asked Bush during a televised interview after the war was underway why he had claimed with such certainty that there were so many weapons in Iraq, he replied, what's the difference? Swanson says, what's the difference? Hundreds of thousands of corpses and a fatal blow to the rule of law among nations. That's the difference. And unless we remove impeachment from the Constitution by failing to exercise it, in which case, truth will no longer matter any more than justice or peace. Why is it always Dennis Kucinich? I don't quite get. There are other liberal members of Congress. Why always Dennis? It's a mystery. We have all sorts of things to get to tonight, and we are going to get to them. The other breaking news story, Scott McClellan has agreed to testify before the House on, when will it be? When will it be, Kathy, do you know? June 20th. He'll go before the House Judiciary Committee and talk about the Bush crime family's role in the leak of CIA agent Valerie Plame's identity. That is June 20th. What's the date today? This is what, the 9th? Today's the 9th? That's 11 days. If I were Scott McClellan, I would hire some armed guards, not from Blackwater, not from DynCorp, hire some armed guards and sequester myself someplace that would be very, very safe for the next couple of weeks, or at least the next 11 days. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Cause he lied to us once, but I don't want him lying no more. Well, there's a mountain of bodies, there's a mountain of debt, there's a mountain of troubles, and it ain't over yet. Said, hey, yeah, the president has got to go. He's got to go. We want our country back. We're going to get it. Want to show him the door. Chemicals and nukes, you know, they never did appear. Yellow, orange, and red, just to keep us.
I'd like to know who leaked. And if anybody's got any information, they ought to take it to the Justice Department so we can find out the leaker.
You see, that's how a Republican self-avowed Christian who knows Jesus as his own best philosopher, that's how he lies. Straightforward, to the point, right in your face. We will hear more of that coming up June 20th when Scott McClellan testifies before the House Judiciary Committee. The purpose of the testimony, obviously, is to at least get it out there on the record, since Nancy Pelosi refuses to impeach these bastards. But maybe enough weight will be produced by McClellan's testimony and what Dennis Kucinich is doing, even as we speak, to begin impeachment hearings in the House Judiciary Committee. Anyone who says this country can't handle it right now is out of their minds. Obviously, there is not enough time to convict this son of a bitch in the Senate, both of these sons of bitches, but to have the record there that these are the crimes they committed. Now, if articles of impeachment are voted out of the House Judiciary Committee, as they would be, since the Democrats have a majority on that committee, it would be impossible then for President Obama to not follow through. Now, how he follows through once Bush and this thuggish Dick Cheney are out of office, I have no idea. But I'm sure there's a mechanism. I'm sure there's a way. Turn it over to criminal courts. This is a matter of crimes, not just against the United States, but crimes against humanity. What Kucinich is reading right now is from a report by, I think, the inspector. I'm not sure where the report's coming from. But it is a compilation or a compendium of the massive hundreds of billions of dollars of fraud deliberately and consciously perpetrated against the American taxpayer by companies connected to Bush and Cheney. I mean, the theft here is unbelievable. We lock people up for life for having 50 pounds of pot in their house that the government can prove they were in possession of with intent to distribute. These sons of bitches have literally stole in the process of committing mass murder billions and billions and billions of dollars. And where's the courage? Where is somebody in the house? Well, there he is. Switch to C-SPAN. Turn on C-SPAN right now. It's not on C-SPAN 2. It's not on C-SPAN 3. It's on C-SPAN. So that you can watch this. ABC, CBS, and none of these corporate networks are going to carry any of this. I'm amazed that C-SPAN is. The only place you're going to get the entire speech is on C-SPAN. We're going to join it and several times tonight and let you hear when he gets back to more of the actual 35 articles of impeachment that should be introduced against this crime syndicate that has taken over the country. It's astonishing. It's astonishing. Where is any network? Where is CNN? Where is MSNBC? Where is that filthy, dis- disgusting Fox Network. Where is there a network right now carrying, here's a member of Congress introducing 35 articles of impeachment on the House floor? Where's the coverage? Yeah, that's right. Nowhere. It's as though the people who influence the way we think, it's as though America doesn't give a goddamn. These people can have committed all these horrendous acts, all the theft and murder and mayhem and fraud and conspiracy, and so what? So what? It's as though nobody cares. Let's go back and see what he's talking about now.
Any opportunity to challenge their detentions. The president, acting on his own claimed authority, has declared the hundreds of detainees at Guantanamo Bay to be enemy combatants, not subject to U.S. law, and not even subject to military law, but nonetheless potentially liable to the death penalty. The detention of individuals without due process violates the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution. While the Bush administration has been rebuked in several court cases, most recently that of Ali al-Mahdi, it continues to attempt to exceed constitutional limits. In all of these actions, violating U.S. and international law, President George W. Bush has acted in a manner contrary to his trust as president and commander-in-chief, and subversive of constitutional government, to the prejudice of the cause of law and justice, and to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Wherefore, President George W. Bush, by such conduct, is guilty of an impeachable offense warranting removal from office.
All right, we're going to take a break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. If you want to pick up on this during the break, go to C-SPAN. We'll be back. Stay with us.
On a nuclear bomb. Nuclear weapon.
You've lied to us, you frickin' liar. Your party's going to hell in a blazing ball of fire, and you lie, lie.
I take personal responsibility for everything I say, of course. Absolutely.
Yeah. 25 before the hour, Dennis Kucinich is on the floor of the House right now introducing a resolution that contains 35 articles of impeachment. We're going to be rejoining his lonely quest for justice in a moment. One that I don't think... Dennis has. Bush is now threatening the lives of American troops if Congress doesn't give him the money he wants for his occupation of Iraq and the rapidly disintegrating war in Afghanistan. Bush is using a technique, and Brandon Friedman mentions this at vetvoice.com. It's a technique commonly employed by those who conduct bank holdups and carjackings. Bush, now hear me. Bush has pledged to stop paying troops in combat if the taxpayer doesn't give him exactly what he wants right away. Do you understand that? He's going to stop. Now, anytime Democrats in Congress have suggested cutting off the funding for the war, they're immediately called traitorous dogs who support Muslim extremists, yada, 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 from the scum suckers that constitute the Republican Party and national media in this country. Bush is now saying that he will stop paying the troops if he doesn't get exactly what he wants. This is from TheHill.com. Bush said that if Congress does not act promptly, critical accounts at the Department of Defense will soon run dry. He added that civilian employees may face temporary layoffs, and the Pentagon would be forced to close down a vital program that is getting potential insurgents off the street and into jobs. If the supplemental spending bill, another, is not enacted after July, Bush said the Department of Defense would no longer be able to pay our troops, including the ones in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, Friedman says, let me just be clear about two points. Insurgents kill Americans. So when Bush says that the Pentagon would be forced to close down a program that gets insurgents off the streets, he's really saying that he'll deliberately allow the threat to American troops in Iraq to increase if he doesn't get his way. He's playing chicken with Congress at the expense of American lives in Iraq. Second, Bush is threatening to stop paying troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's funny because you never hear him threatening to cut the contracts of Halliburton or Blackwater or SAIC or DynCorp and thus cutting their employees' inflated salaries. You know, you never hear that. But that's a clear indication and proof positive the Bush administration is always more loyal to contractors than to soldiers. And when forced to cut spending, Bush would rather starve members of the armed forces than cut the paychecks, the exorbitant paychecks given to those who work for privatized military companies. There are more contractors than troops in Iraq. They're paid a tremendous amount more than our troops and often provided with better equipment. And we're being stolen blind to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. So the majority of the funding for this goddamn occupation goes to the contractors. Why, then, do the troops have to be the first to suffer if Bush doesn't get his way? Huh? Republicans really love the military, don't they? Let's go back to Dennis Kucinich.
During the late 20th century, the administration has claimed that prior administrations have practiced extraordinary rendition. But, well, this is technically true. Earlier renditions were used only to capture people with outstanding arrest warrants or convictions who were outside in order to deliver them to stand trial or serve their sentences in the United States. The president has refused to divulge how many people have been subject to extraordinary rendition since September 2001. It's possible some have died in captivity. As one U.S. official stated off the record regarding the program, some of those who were renditioned were later delivered to Guantanamo, while others were sent there directly. An example of this is the case of six Algerian Bosnians who immediately after being cleared by the Supreme Court of Bosnia-Herzegovina in January 2002 of allegedly plotting to attack the U.S. and U.K. embassies were captured, bound, and gagged by U.S. Special Forces and then renditioned to Guantanamo. In perhaps the most egregious proven case of rendition, Maher Arar, a Canadian citizen born in Syria, was picked up in September of 2002 while transiting through New York's JFK Airport on the way home to Canada. Immigration and FBI officials detained and interrogated him for nearly 2 weeks. Illegally denied.
All right, now most people, I think everybody in Canada is familiar with the Harar case. A few people in the United States are familiar with that case. But where it concerns Guantanamo, the Guardian of the UK is reporting today that interrogators at Guantanamo were told to destroy their notes so that the notes could not be used to highlight the torture of the detainees. That's according to a U.S. military lawyer, William Kubler, who is a lieutenant commander, is defending Omar Khadr, a Canadian national, facing trial for alleged war crimes in Afghanistan. War crimes in Afghanistan. Since when? Since when have we become the force around the globe that arrests and puts and tortures and puts people on trial for war crimes in another country? Afghanistan has no government. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. It's a puppet government. More on Omar Khadr in just a second. The attorney for him, an American, said the classified instructions to destroy your notes regarding torture were included in an operations manual that prosecutors allowed him to see last week. The apparently willful an officially sanctioned destruction of notes means that the lawyer here would be unable to challenge the so-called confessions given by Cotter. Now, what about Cotter? What about Cotter? He's 21. He was detained in Afghanistan at the age of 15. Do you have 15-year-old children? Do you? Do you have 15-year-old grandchildren? Think of a 15-year-old. Was that freshman, sophomore, at most in high school? Think of a 15-year-old. This kid is being charged with murder, allegedly for throwing a grenade that killed a U.S. Special Forces soldier in 2002. That's what he's being charged with, because that's what they were able to torture out of him. 15! 15 years old! The attorney said the way the interrogations were carried out was central to this kid's case, because prosecutors were relying largely on testimony obtained from him at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan when he was first sold to the Americans. 15! How much torture would it take on your son or your daughter, you Republican bastard listening tonight? How much torture on your grandchild before your grandchild would confess to killing Bobby Kennedy? How much torture do you want? The attorney says if handwritten notes were destroyed in accordance with standard operating procedure, the government intentionally deprived this kid's lawyers of key evidence with which to challenge the reliability of his statements, Keebler said. So, prisoners released from both Guantanamo and Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan have said that torture was routine during interrogation. The Pentagon denies this. Okay, then why destroy the notes? If there was no torture, oh, that's right. Oh, goddamn, I keep forgetting the standard line. Yeah, if the notes are made public, then you see the booger bears in Afghanistan and Iraq will be able to train their terrorists in ways of withstanding the torture. Oh, that's right. Let's go back to Dennis Kucinich.
Not be repatriated where there are serious reasons for fearing that repatriating the individual would be contrary to general principles of established international law for the protection of human beings. Thus, all of the Guantanamo detainees, as well as the rendition captives, are protected by international human rights protections and humanitarian law. By all of his actions, as outlined above, the president has abused his power, broken the law, deceived the American people, and placed American military personnel, and indeed all Americans, especially those who travel or live abroad, at risk of similar treatment. Furthermore, in the eyes of the rest of the world, the president has made the U.S. once a model of respect for human rights and respect for the rule of law, into a state where international law is neither respected nor upheld. Now, in all these actions and decisions in violation of United States and international law, President George Bush has acted in a manner contrary to his trust as president and commander-in-chief.
What you're listening to is Dennis Kucinich introducing a resolution on the floor of the House that contains 35 articles of impeachment against the criminals who have been running this country, or the criminal, for the past 7.5 years. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
very comfortable in the job because I've got great advice and advisors to whom I get good advice from great advisors to whom I listen.
It's 10 before the hour. Let's go back to Dennis Kucinich, who's on the floor of the U.S. House, introducing a resolution containing 35 articles of impeachment.
About a threat of nuclear attack from the nation of Iran. The National Intelligence Estimate released to Congress and the public on December 4, 2007, which confirmed that the government of the nation of Iran had ceased any efforts to develop nuclear weapons, was completed in 2006. Yet the president and his aides continued to suggest during 2007 that such a nuclear threat was developing and might already exist. National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley stated at the time, the National Intelligence Estimate regarding Iran was released, that the president had been briefed on its findings in the last few months. Hadley's statement establishes a timeline that shows the president knowingly sought to deceive Congress and the American people about a nuclear threat that did not exist. Hadley has stated that the president, quote, was basically told, stand down. And yet, the president and his aides continued to make false claims about the prospect that Iran was trying to build a nuclear weapon that could lead to World War III. This evidence establishes that the president actively engaged in and had full knowledge of a campaign by his administration to make a false case for an attack on Iran, thus warping the national security debate at a critical juncture and creating the prospect of an illegal and unnecessary attack on a sovereign nation. Even after the National Intelligence Estimate was released to Congress and the American people, the president stated he didn't believe anything had changed and suggested he and members of administration would continue to argue that Iran should be seen as posing a threat to the United States. He did this despite the fact that United States Intelligence Agency had clearly and officially stated this was not the case. Evidence suggests that the Bush administration's attempts to portray Iran as a threat are part of a broader U.S. policy towards Iran. On September 30, 2001, then Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld established an official military objective of overturning the regime in Iran, as well as those in Iraq, Syria, and four other countries in the Middle East, according to a document quoted in then Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Douglas Feith's book, War and Decision. General Wesley Clark reports in his book, Winning Modern Wars, being told by a friend in the Pentagon in November 2001 that the list of governments that Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz planned to overthrow included Iraq, Iran, Syria, Libya, Sudan, and Somalia. Clark writes that the list also included Lebanon. Journalist Gareth Porter reported in May 2008 asking Feith at a public event which of the six regimes on the Clark list were included in the Rumsfeld paper, to which Feith replied, all of them. Rumsfeld's aides also drafted a second version of the paper as instructions to all military commanders in the development of campaign plans against terrorism. The paper called for military commanders to assist other government agencies as directed, to encourage populations dominated by terrorist organizations or their supporters to overthrow that domination. In January 2005, Seymour Hersh reported in the New Yorker magazine that the Bush administration had been conducting secret reconnaissance missions inside Iran at least since the summer of 2004. In June 2005, former United Nations Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter reported that the United States security forces had been sending members of the Mujahideen al-Qaq, MEK, into Iranian territory. The MEK had been designated a terrorist organization by the United States the European Union, Canada, Iraq, and Iran. Ritter reported that the United States Central Intelligence Agency had used the MEK to carry out remote bombings in Iran. In April 2006, Hirsch reported in the New Yorker magazine that U.S. combat troops had entered and were operating in Iran, where they were working with minority groups, including the Azeris, the Baluchis, and the Kurds. In April 2006, Larissa Alexandrova reported on Raw Story that the U.S. Department of Defense was working with and training the MEK, or former members of the MEK, sending them to commit acts of violence in southern Iran in areas where recent attacks had left many dead. Raw Story reported that the Pentagon had adopted the policy of supporting MEK shortly after the 2003 invasion of Iraq and in response to the influence of Vice President Richard B. Cheney's office. Raw Story subsequently reported that no presidential finding and no congressional oversight existed on MEK operations. In March 2007, Hirsch reported in the New Yorker magazine that the Bush administration was attempting to stem the growth of Shiite influence in the Middle East, specifically the Iranian government and Hezbollah in Lebanon, by funding violent Sunni organizations without any congressional authorization or oversight.
All right, we're coming up on a break here. We are going to rejoin Dennis Kucinich, who is on the floor of the U.S. House tonight, introducing a resolution that contains 35 articles of impeachment. Now, obviously, this is not, well, it's obvious to us here at the Molloy Program, this is not the show that we had planned tonight, but right before airtime, I got about 15 emails from people pointing out to us that Kucinich was about, as a matter of fact, he had started at 8:40, I believe, Eastern Time. I think it's critically important that we listen to this, you and me. So as much of this as we can squeeze into the program tonight, we're going to do so. I don't think that it's going to be the lead story on the newscast tomorrow and probably nowhere available on any of the cable news networks. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. We are covering or checking in with Dennis Kucinich, who is, since about 8:40 this evening, has been introducing a resolution containing 35 articles of impeachment against George W. Bush on the floor of the United States House. A couple of emails here. A.E. writes in, Mike, there's been a lot of talk about presidential history being made this year. Dennis Kucinich is making history right now. Regardless of what happens after this, Bush and Cheney have been officially accused of crimes in the United States House of Representatives. This will be on their permanent record. Prairie 2 writes in, Mike, the term ending, Bush's term ending, would not end impeachment proceedings. It's not necessary for an individual to even hold office to be impeached, as it forbids holding office in the future or even employment or other benefit. Conviction by the Senate would also nullify any pardon received. And I'll leave the person's name off on this one. Regarding impeachment, Mike, we know this is going nowhere. I want to see just one member of the House or Senate, one single person among all of those who will turn his or her back on this resolution, stand up and challenge the validity and accuracy of any of the accusations in the Kucinich resolution. They will not, because they cannot. The Republicans will understandably refuse to support any action that threatens to expose their criminal leader, but the Democrats will shamefully ignore Kucinich as an embarrassment to the party. Obama will do the politically correct thing and pretend all this is quite silly. They are not worthy of our support. I hope America gets what it deserves at this point. That's how bitter I've become. Let's go back and listen to more of Ohio Congressman and Democrat Dennis Kucinich as he reads into the congressional record introduces a resolution calling for the impeachment of George Bush on 35 articles of impeachment.
For President George W. Bush, by such conduct, is guilty of an impeachable offense warranting removal from office. Article 23, violation of the Posse Comitatus Act. In his conduct while President of the United States, George W. Bush, in violation of his constitutional oath to faithfully execute the office of President of the United States, and to the best of his ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in violation of his constitutional duty under Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, has both personally and acting through his agents and subordinates repeatedly and illegally established programs to appropriate the power of the military for use in law enforcement. Specifically, he has contravened United States Code Title 18, Section 1385, originally enacted in 1878, subsequently amended as, quote, use of Army and Air Force as Posse Comitatus, unquote, and commonly known as the Posse Comitatus Act. The Act states, quote, whoever, except in cases and under circumstances expressly authorized by the Constitution or Act of Congress, willfully uses any part of the Army or the Air Force as a posse comitatus or otherwise to execute the laws, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 2 years or both. The Posse Comitatus Act is designed to prevent the military from becoming a national police force. The Posse Comitatus Act is designed to prevent the military from becoming a national police force. The Declaration of Independence states as a specific grievance against the British that the King had, quote, kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislators, had, quote, affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power, and had quartered large bodies of armed troops among us, protecting them by mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, unquote. Despite the Posse Comitatus's act's intent and in contravention of the law, President Bush, A, has used military forces for law enforcement purposes on the U.S. Border Patrol, B, has established a program to use military personnel for surveillance and information on criminal activities, C, is using military espionage equipment to collect intelligence information for law enforcement use on civilians within the United States, D, employs active duty military personnel in surveillance agencies, including the Central Intelligence Agency. In June 2006, President Bush ordered National Guard troops deployed to the border shared by Mexico with Arizona, Texas, and California. This deployment, which by 2007 reached a maximum of 6,000 troops, had orders to, quote, conduct surveillance and operate detection equipment, work with border entry identification teams, analyze information, assist with communications, and give administrative support to the Border Patrol, unquote, and concerned, quote, providing intelligence, inspecting cargo, conducting surveillance. The Air Force's Eagle Eyes program encourages Air Force military staff to gather evidence on American citizens. Eagle Eyes instructs Air Force personnel to engage in surveillance and then advises them to alert local authorities, asking military staff to surveil and gather evidence on public citizens. This contravenes Department of Defense Directive 5525.5, subject DOD cooperation with civilian law enforcement, which limits such activities President Bush has implemented a program to use imagery from military satellites for domestic law enforcement through the National Applications Office. President Bush has assigned numerous active duty military personnel to civilian institutions such as the CIA and Department of Homeland Security, both of which have responsibilities for law enforcement and intelligence. In addition, on May 9, 2007, President Bush released National Security Presidential Directive 51, which effectively gives the president unchecked power to control the entire government and to define that government in time of emergency, as well as the power to determine whether there is an emergency. The document also contains classified continuity annexes. In July 2007, and again in August 2007, Representative Peter DeFazio, a senior member of the House Homeland Security Committee, sought access to the classified annexes. Congressman DeFazio and other leaders of the Homeland Security Committee, including Chairman Benny Thompson, have been denied a review of the continuity of government classified annexes, at least as we know. In all of these actions and decisions, President George W. Bush has acted in a manner contrary to his trust as president and commander-in-chief and subversive of constitutional government, to the prejudice and the cause of law and justice, and to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Wherefore, President George W. Bush, by such conduct, is guilty of an impeachable offense warranting removal from office. Article 24. Spying on American citizens without a court-ordered warrant in violation of the law and in violation of the Fourth Amendment. In his conduct while President of the United States, George W. Bush, in violation of his constitutional oath to faithfully execute the office of President of the United States, and to the best of his ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in violation of his constitutional duty, under Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution, to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, has both personally and acting through his agents and subordinates knowingly violated the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution and the Foreign Intelligence Service Act of 1978, FISA, by authorizing warrantless electronic surveillance of American citizens. To wit, number one, the president was aware of the FISA law requiring a court order for any wiretap as evidenced by the following. A, quote, now, by the way, anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, it requires a wiretap, requires a court order. Nothing's changed, by the way. When you're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do so, unquote. This from a White House press conference, President Bush, on April 20th, 2004. B, quote, law enforcement officers need a federal judge's permission to wiretap a foreign terrorist's phone or to track his calls or to search his property. Officials must meet strict standards to use any of the tools we're talking about, unquote. That's from President Bush's speech in Baltimore, Maryland, on July the 20th, 2005. Two, the president repeatedly ordered the NSA to place wiretaps on American citizens without requesting a warrant from FISA, as evidenced by the following. A, quote, months after the September 11th attack, President Bush secretly authorized the National Security Agency to eavesdrop on Americans and others inside the United States to search for evidence of terrorist activity without the court-approved warrants ordinarily required for domestic spying, according to government officials. This is a New York Times, that's unquote, New York Times article by James Rissen and Eric Lichtblau on December 12, 2005.
All right, what you're listening to is Dennis Kucinich introducing a resolution with 35 articles of impeachment against George W. Bush. He is at 24. We're going to pick this up when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
through a hole in the air.
People are being investigated. It doesn't make sense for us to let them know who they are.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly
23 past the hour. You're listening to Nova M Radio. We are going to rejoin C-SPAN now. Dennis Kucinich is introducing a resolution on the floor of the United States House containing 35 articles of impeachment against George W. Bush.
Describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized, unquote, from the U.S. Constitution. C. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978 unambiguously limits warrantless domestic electronic surveillance, even in a congressionally declared war, to the first 15 days of that war, criminalizes any such electronic surveillance not authorized by statute, and expressly establishes FISA and two chapters of the Federal Criminal Code governing wiretaps for intelligence purposes and for criminal investigation, respectively, as the, quote, exclusive means by which electronic surveillance and the interception of domestic wire, oral, and electronic communications may be conducted. This is from 50 U.S.C., Sections 1811, 1809, from 18 U.S.C., Section 2511, to paragraph F, and this is in a letter, quoting from a letter, from Harvard Law Professor Lawrence Tribe to John Conyers on January 6, 2006. D. In a December 19, 2005 press briefing, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez stated, quote, our position is that the authorization to use force, which was passed by the Congress in the days following the following September 11th, constitutes that other authorization, that other statute by Congress, to engage in this kind of signals intelligence. E, the authorization to use military force in Iraq does not give any explicit authorization related to electronic surveillance. Any reading of House Joint Resolution 114 would reveal. F, and I quote, from the foregoing analysis, it appears unlikely that a court would hold that Congress has expressly or impliedly authorized the National Security Agency electronic surveillance operations here under discussion, and it would likewise appear that to the extent that those surveillances fall within the definition of electronic surveillance within the meaning of FISA or any other activity regulated under Title III, Congress intended to cover the entire field with these statutes. This from the Presidential Authority to Grant Warrantless Electronic Surveillance to Gather Foreign Intelligence Information, provided by the Congressional Research Service on January 1st, 2006. G, quote, and this in a letter from Harvard Law Professor.
All right, we're going to take another break here. Damn. again, this was not on the agenda tonight, but our agenda, but we're going to pick it up when we come back after the break. Dennis Kucinich on the floor of the House. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Let it fly.
We've got a lot of problems.
But I'm going to tell you something about this country. In my mind, there is no doubt that we won't solve these problems.
Yeah, we understand. 25 before the hour, Mary, listening in Arkansas, writes, nothing was mentioned about this on the evening news, and I would not have known about it if I hadn't been listening to KTLK tonight. That's our affiliate in Los Angeles. We need to contact all of our members of Congress and tell them that they must support these articles of impeachment against Bush. Let's go back. Dennis Kucinich is on the floor of the House introducing a resolution containing 35 articles of impeachment against George Bush. Let's rejoin C-SPAN.
To claim the right to violate acts of Congress even before he signs those acts into law. In June 2007, the Government Accountability Office reported that in a sample of President Bush's signing statements the office had studied, for 30% of them, the Bush administration had already proceeded to violate the laws the statements claimed the right to violate. In all of these actions and decisions, President George W. Bush has acted in a manner contrary to his trust as President and Commander-in-Chief and subversive of constitutional government, to the prejudice of the cause of law and justice, and to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Wherefore, President George W. Bush, by such conduct, is guilty of an impeachable offense warranting removal from office. Article 27. Failing to comply with congressional subpoenas and instructing former employees not to comply in his conduct while President of the United States, George Bush, in violation of his constitutional oath to faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and to the best of his ability preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in violation of his constitutional duty under Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution, to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, has both personally and acting through his agents and subordinates refused to comply with congressional subpoenas and instructed former employees not to comply with congressional subpoenas. Subpoenas not complied with include a House Judiciary Committee subpoena for Justice Department papers and emails issued April 10, 2007. A House Oversight and Government Reform Committee subpoena for the testimony of the Secretary of State issued April 25, 2007. A House Judiciary Committee subpoena for the testimony of former White House counsel Harriet Myers and documents issued June 13, 2007, a Senate Judiciary Committee subpoena for documents and testimony of White House Chief of Staff Joshua Bolten, issued June 13, 2007, a Senate Judiciary Committee subpoena for documents and testimony of White House Political Director Sarah Taylor, issued June 13, 2007. Now, Taylor appeared but refused to answer questions. A Senate Judiciary Committee subpoena for documents and testimony of White House Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove, issued June 26, 2007. A Senate Judiciary Committee subpoena for documents and testimony of White House Deputy Political Director J. Scott Jennings, issued June 26, 2007. Jennings appeared but refused to answer questions. A Senate Judiciary Committee subpoena for legal analysis and other documents concerning the NSA warrantless wiretapping program from the White House, Vice President Cheney, the Department of Justice, and the National Security Council. If the documents are not produced, the subpoena requires the testimony of White House Chief of Staff Josh Bolten, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, Cheney Chief of Staff David Addington, National Security Council Director V. Philip Lago, issued June 27, 2007. a House Oversight and Government Reform Committee subpoena for Lieutenant General Kensinger. In all these actions and decisions, President Bush has acted in a manner contrary to his trust as president and subversive of constitutional government, to the prejudice of the cause of law and justice, and to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Wherefore, President George W. Bush, by such conduct, is guilty of an impeachable offense warranting removal from office. Article 27, strike that, Article 28, tampering with free and fair elections, corruption of the administration of justice. In his conduct, will President of the United States George W. Bush, in violation of his constitutional oath to faithfully execute the office of President of the United States, and to the best of his ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in violation of his constitutional duty under Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution, to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, has both personally and acting through his agents and subordinates conspired to undermine and tamper with the conduct of free and fair elections, and to corrupt the administration of justice by United States attorneys and other employees of the Department of Justice through abuse of the appointment power. Towards this end, the President and the Vice President, both personally and through their agents, did engage in a program of manufacturing false allegations of voting fraud in targeted jurisdictions where the Democratic Party enjoyed an advantage in electoral performance or otherwise was problematic for the President's Republican Party, in order that public confidence in election results favorable to the Democratic Party be undermined. Directed United States attorneys to launch and announce investigations of certain leaders, candidates, and elected officials affiliated with the Democratic Party, at times calculated to cause the most political damage and confusion, most often in the weeks immediately preceding an election, in order that public confidence in the suitability for office of Democratic Party leaders, candidates, and elected officials be undermined. Directed United States attorneys to determine or scale back existing investigations of certain Republican Party leaders, candidates, and elected officials allied with the George Bush administration, and to refuse to pursue new or proposed investigations of certain Republican Party leaders, candidates, and elected officials allied with George Bush's administration, in order that public confidence in the suitability of such Republican Party leaders, candidates, and elected officials be bolstered or restored. Threatened to terminate the employment of the following United States attorneys who refused to comply with such directives and purposes: David C. Iglesias as U.S. Attorney for the District of New Mexico, Kevin Ryan as U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of California, John L. McKay as U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Washington, Paul K. Charlton as U.S. Attorney for the District of Arizona, Carol C. Lamb as U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of California, Daniel C. Bogdan as U.S. Attorney for the District of Nevada, Margaret M. Chiara as U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Michigan, Todd Graves as U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Missouri, Harry Bud Cummins III as U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Arkansas, Thomas M. DiBiagio as U.S. Attorney for the District of Maryland, and Casey Warner as U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia. further. George W. Bush has both personally and acting through his agents and subordinates, together with the vice president, conspired to obstruct the lawful congressional investigation of these dismissals of United States attorneys and the related scheme to undermine and tamper with the conduct of free and fair elections and to corrupt the administration. Contrary to his oath faithfully to execute the office of President of the United States and to the best of his ability preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in violation of his constitutional duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, George W. Bush has, without lawful cause or excuse, directed not to appear before the Committee on the Judiciary of the House of Representatives certain witnesses summoned by duly authorized subpoenas issued by that committee on June 13, 2007. In refusing to permit the testimony of these witnesses, George W. Bush, substituting his judgment as to what testimony was necessary for the inquiry, interposed the powers of the presidency against the lawful subpoenas of the House of Representatives, thereby assuming to himself functions and judgments necessary to the exercise of the checking and balancing power of oversight vested in the House of Representatives.
All right, we're listening to Dennis Kucinich introducing a resolution in the U.S. House containing 35 articles of impeachment. We'll pick it up when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Shame on you. It fooled me. We can't get fooled again.
It's nine before the hour. Dennis Kucinich is on the floor of the House introducing a resolution containing 35 articles of impeachment against George Bush. Right now he's talking about Bush's violation of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Let's rejoin C-SPAN.
In the cities of Cleveland, Ohio and Columbus, Ohio, along with other urban areas in the state of Ohio, an adequate number of electronic voting machines and provisional paper ballots, thereby unlawfully impeding duly registered voters from the act of voting and thus violating the civil rights of an unknown number of United States citizens. A. In Franklin County, George W. Bush and his agent, Ohio Secretary of State John Kenneth Blackwell, co-chair of the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign, failed to protect the rights of African-American voters by not properly investigating the withholding of 125 electronic voting machines assigned to the city of Columbus. B. 42 African-American precincts in Columbus were each missing one voting machine that had been present in the 2004 primary. C. African-American voters in the city of Columbus were forced to wait 3 to 7 hours to vote in the 2004 presidential election. Subparagraph 2. Willfully issuing unclear and conflicting rules regarding the methods and manner of becoming a legally registered voter in the state of Ohio, and willfully issuing unclear and unnecessary edicts regarding the weight of paper registration forms legally acceptable to the state of Ohio. thereby creating confusion for both voters and voting officials, and thus impeding the right of an unknown number of United States citizens to register and vote, this relating to the activities of Ohio Secretary of State John Kenneth Blackwell. A, Ohio Secretary of State John Kenneth Blackwell directed through Advisory 2004-31 that voter registration forms, which were greatest in urban minority areas, should not be accepted and should be returned unless submitted on 80-pound bond paperweight. Blackwell's own office was found to be using 60-pound bond paperweight. That's an 80 bond paperweight as opposed to a 60 bond paperweight in his own office. Subparagraph 3. The Secretary of State willfully permitted and encouraged election officials in Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Toledo to conduct a massive partisan purge of registered voter rolls, eventually expunging more than 300,000 voters, many of whom were duly registered voters, and who were thus deprived of their constitutional right to vote. A, between the 2000 and 2004 presidential elections, 24.93% of the voters in the city of Cleveland, a city with a majority of African-American citizens, were purged from the voting rolls. B, in that same period, the Ohio County of Miami, with census data indicating a 98% Caucasian population, refused to purge any voters from its rolls. Miami County merged voters from other surrounding counties into its voting rolls and even allowed voters from other states to vote. C, in Toledo, Ohio, an urban city with a high African-American concentration, 28,000 voters were purged from the voting rolls in August of 2004, just prior to the presidential election. This purge was conducted under the control and direction of George W. Bush's agent, Ohio Secretary of State John Kenneth Blackwell, outside of the regularly established cycle of purging voters in odd-numbered years. Subparagraph 4, willfully allowing Ohio Secretary of State John Kenneth Blackwell, acting under the color of law and as an agent of George W. Bush, to issue a directive that no votes would be counted unless cast in the right precinct, reversing Ohio's long-standing practice of counting.
We're listening to Congressman Dennis Kucinich, Democrat from Ohio, as he introduces a resolution on the House floor containing 35 articles of impeachment against George W. Bush. We're going to continue this when we come back after the break. Prairie 2 writes, so far the impeachment story has been covered by the Associated Press, Reuters, MWC News in Canada, Baltimore Sun, Cleveland Plain Dealer. That's it. It's astonishing. And I will guarantee you that Dennis Kucinich is addressing an empty U.S. House of Representatives right now. But he soldiers on. It will become part of the record. If we had a Democratic Party in this country that had any kind of courage or respect for the U.S. Constitution, what so goddamn ever, there would be a massive move to remove these people from office tomorrow morning. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. MSNBC is running an online poll. Do you believe President Bush's actions justify impeachment? 500,000, almost 600,000 votes so far. 89% say yes. 89% say yes. Dennis Kucinich is on the floor of the House introducing a resolution containing 35 articles of impeachment. He just began reading article number 30. Let's join him.
Sources of Medicare. By forcing it to compete with subsidized private insurance plans, which are allowed to...
By the way, this is the Malloy program on Nova M Radio.
Those they will cover. Failing to provide reasonable levels of reimbursement to Medicare providers, thereby discouraging providers from participating in the program, and designing a Medicare Part D benefit without cost controls, which allowed pharmaceutical companies to gouge the American taxpayers for the price of prescription drugs. The President created, manipulated, and disseminated information given to the citizens and to the Congress of the United States in support of his prescription drug plan for Medicare that enriched drug companies while failing to save beneficiaries sufficient money on their prescription drugs. He misled Congress and the American people into thinking the cost of the benefit was $400 billion. It was widely understood that if the cost exceeded that amount, the bill would not pass due to concerns about fiscal irresponsibility. A Medicare actuary who possessed information regarding the true cost of the plan, which was not $400 billion but $539 billion, was instructed by the Medicare administrator to deny congressional requests for the information. The actuary was threatened with sanctions if the information was disclosed to Congress, which, unaware of the information, approved the bill. Despite the fact that official cost estimates far exceeded $400 billion, President Bush offered assurances to Congress that the cost was $400 billion when his office had information to the contrary. In the House of Representatives, the bill passed by a single vote, and the conference report passed by only 5 votes. The White House knew the actual cost of the drug benefit was high enough to prevent its passage. Yet the White House concealed the truth and impeded an investigation into its culpability. In all of these decisions and actions, President George W. Bush has acted in a manner contrary to his trust as President and Commander-in-Chief, and subversive of constitutional government, to the prejudice and the cause of justice, and to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Wherefore, President George W. Bush, by such conduct, is guilty of an impeachable offense warranting removal from office. Article 31. Katrina. Failure to plan for the predicted disaster of Hurricane Katrina, failure to respond to a civil emergency. In his conduct while President of the United States, George W. Bush, in violation of his constitutional oath, to faithfully execute the office of President of the United States, and to the best of his ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in violation of his constitutional duty under Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution, to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, has both personally and acting through his agents and subordinates failed to take sufficient action to protect life and property prior to and in the face of Hurricane Katrina in 2005, given decades of foreknowledge of the dangers of storms to New Orleans and specific forewarnings in the days prior to the storm. The President failed to prepare for the predictable and the predicted disasters, failed to respond to an immediate need of which he was informed, and has subsequently failed to rebuild the section of our nation that was destroyed. Hurricane Katrina killed at least 1,282 people, with 2 million more displaced. 302,000 housing units were destroyed or damaged by the hurricane. 71% of those were low-income units. More than 500 sewage plants were destroyed. More than 170 point source leakages of gasoline, oil, or natural gas. More than 200 gas stations submerged. Several chemical plants, 8 oil refineries, and a Superfund site was submerged. 8 million gallons of oil spill, toxic materials seeped into floodwaters and spread through much of the city and surrounding areas. The predictable increased strength of hurricanes, such as Katrina, has been identified by scientists for years. And yet the Bush administration has denied this science and restricted such information from official reports, publications, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Agency's website. Donald Kennedy, editor-in-chief of Science, wrote in 2006 that, quote, hurricane intensity has increased with oceanic surface temperatures over the past 30 years. The physics of hurricane intensity growth has clarified and explained the thermodynamic basis for these observations. Emmanuel has tested this relationship and presented convincing evidence. Unquote. Now, the Federal Emergency Management's 2001 list, FEMA's 2001 list, of the top three most likely and most devastating disasters were a San Francisco, this is their 2001 list, San Francisco earthquake, a terrorist attack in New York, and a Category 4 hurricane hitting New Orleans, with New Orleans being the number one item on that list. FEMA conducted a five-day hurricane simulation exercise in 2004, Hurricane Pam, mimicking a Katrina-like event. This exercise combined the National Weather Service, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the LSU Hurricane Center, and other state and federal agencies, resulting in the development of emergency response plans. The exercise demonstrated, among other things, that thousands of mainly indigent New Orleans residents would be unable to evacuate on their own. They need substantial government assistance. These plans, however, were not implemented in part due to the president's slashing of funds for protection. In the year before Hurricane Katrina hit, the president continued to cut budgets and deny grants to the Gulf Coast. In June of 2004, the Army Corps of Engineers' levy budget for New Orleans was cut. And it was cut again in June of 2005, this time by $71.2 million, or a whopping 44% of the budget. As a result, the Army Corps of Engineers was forced to suspend any repair work on the levees. In 2004, FEMA denied a Louisiana disaster mitigation grant request. The president was given multiple warnings that Hurricane Katrina had a high likelihood of causing serious damage to New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. At 10 a.m. on Saturday, the 28th of August, 2005, the day before the storm hit, the National Weather Service published an alert titled, "Devastating Damage Expected." Printed in all capital letters, the alert stated that most of the area will be uninhabitable for weeks, perhaps longer. At least one half of well-constructed homes will have roof and wall failure. Power outages will last for weeks. Water shortages will make human suffering incredible by modern standards. The Homeland Security Department was also briefed. And also briefed the president on the scenario, warning of levee breaches and severe flooding. According to the New York Times, quote, a Homeland Security Department report submitted to the White House at 1:47 a.m. on August 29th, hours before the storm hit, said, any storm rated Category 4 or greater will likely lead to severe flooding and or levee breaching, unquote. These warnings clearly contradict the statements made by President Bush immediately after the storm that such devastation could not have been predicted. On the 1st of September 2005, the president said, I don't think anyone anticipated the breach of the levees. The president's response to Katrina by way of FEMA and the Department of Homeland Security was criminally delayed, indifferent, and inept. The only Federal Emergency Management employee posted in New Orleans in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Katrina Marty Bahamonde emailed head of FEMA, Michael Brown, from his BlackBerry device on August 31st, 2005, regarding the conditions. The email was urgent and detailed and indicated the situation is past critical. Estimates are many will die within hours. Brown's reply was emblematic of the administration's entire response to the catastrophe. Thanks for the update. Anything specific I need to do or tweak? The Secretary of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff, did not declare an emergency, did not...
It's about 17 past the hour. We're going to take another break here. Dennis Kucinich is who you're listening to on the program tonight. Again, it's not what we planned tonight, but this is, in my opinion, absolutely critical because what you're hearing here is the detailed breakdown of those events that constitute the list of crimes against this country committed by George Bush. Imagine how this sort of stuff, or remember how this sort of stuff has been reported by right-wing radio for the past 7 years. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. Killing off the price of gas. He would have been up in Connecticut twice as fast. After all that we've been through, nothing's changed. You can call Red Cross, but the fact remains that George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people.
He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse.
I don't think anybody anticipated the breach of the levees. I
told him once. It's about 22 past the hour. We are listening to Dennis Kucinich introducing a resolution in the U.S. House containing 35 articles of impeachment. He is up to number 32 now. He's been talking nonstop for about 3 hours. And although the camera hasn't indicated as such, we can assume it's to an empty house. And also, there are only about four or five different news agencies that are carrying any information about this whatsoever. Let's go back to Dennis Kucinich on C-SPAN.
Especially in the developing world, and have adverse effects on food production and fresh water availability.
He's talking about global warming and Bush's denial of the science in this resolution.
That's constituting an abuse of power and criminal neglect. He has also actively endeavored to undermine efforts by the federal government, states, and other nations to take action on their own. In March 2001, President Bush announced the U.S. would not be pursuing ratification of the Kyoto Protocol, an international effort to reduce greenhouse gases. The United States is the only industrialized nation that has failed to ratify the accord. In March of 2008, Representative Henry Waxman wrote to EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson, quote, in August 2003, the Bush administration denied a petition to regulate CO2 emissions from motor vehicles by deciding that CO2 was not a pollutant under the Clean Air Act. In April 2007, the U.S. Supreme Court overruled that determination in Massachusetts versus the EPA. The Supreme Court wrote that if EPA makes a finding of endangerment, the Clean Air Act requires the agency to regulate emissions of the deleterious pollutant from new motor vehicles. The EPA then conducted an extensive investigation involving 60 to 70 staff who concluded that CO2 emissions endanger both human health and welfare. These findings were submitted to the White House, after which work on the findings and the required regulations was halted. End of quote from Mr. Waxman. Three, a memo to members of the Committee on Oversight and Government Reform on May 19, 2008, stated, quote, the record before the committee shows, one, the career staff at EPA unanimously supporting granting California's petition to be allowed to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from cars and trucks, consistent with California law. Two, Stephen Johnson, the Administrator of EPA, also supported granting California's petition, at least in part. And three, Administrator Johnson reversed his position after communications with officials in the White House. The President has suppressed the release of scientific information relating to global climate change, an action which undermines Congress's ability to legislate and provide oversight, and has thwarted efforts to prevent global climate change, despite the serious threat that it poses. One, February 2001, ExxonMobil wrote a memo to the White House outlining ways to influence the outcome of third assessment report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. The memo opposed the re-election of Dr. Robert Watson as the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change chairman. The White House then supported an opposition candidate who was subsequently elected to replace Dr. Watson. It's Dr. Watson. Number two, the New York Times, on January 29, 2006, reported that James Hansen, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration senior climate scientist, was warned of dire consequences if he continued to speak out about global climate change and the need for reducing emissions of associated gases. The Times also reported that, quote, at climate laboratories of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, for example, many scientists who routinely took calls from reporters 5 years ago can now only do so if the interview is approved by administration officials in Washington, and then only if a public affairs officer is present or on the phone, unquote. Three. In December of 2007, the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform issued a report based on 16 months of investigation and 27,000 pages of documentation. According to the summary, quote, the evidence before the committee leads to one inescapable conclusion.
We'll rejoin Congressman Dennis Kucinich right after this break. One thing you can count on tomorrow, either right-wing talk radio, which is 99% of what you hear on radio, will ignore this, or will attempt to make a fool of Kucinich. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Look at Harkin. The SEC released documents, and the key documents said there's no case.
Yeah, well, good for you. We're listening to Dennis Kucinich, who is up to Article 33 of his 35-count impeachment resolution being introduced to an empty U.S. House of Representatives tonight and a national news media that doesn't give a goddamn one way or the other. Let's go back to Dennis Kucinich. This one is about the events prior to 9/11.
Consistent with preparations for hijackings or other types of attacks, including recent surveillance of federal buildings in New York. The article also noted that the CIA and FBI were investigating a call to our embassy in the United Arab Emirates in May, saying that a group of bin Laden supporters was in the U.S. planning attacks with explosives. The president spent the rest of August 6th and almost all the rest of August 2001 on vacation. There's no evidence that he called any meetings of his advisors to discuss this alarming report. When the title and substance of this presidential daily briefing article were later reported in the press, then National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice began a sustained campaign to play down its significance until the actual text was eventually released by the White House. New York Times writer Douglas Gell put it this way, quote, in a single 17-sentence document, the intelligence briefing delivered to President Bush in August 2001 spells out the who, hints at the what, and points towards the where of the terrorist attacks on New York and Washington that followed 38 days later, unquote. Eleanor Hill, executive director of the Joint Congressional Committee investigating the performance of the U.S. Intelligence Committee community, before September 11, 2001, reported that in mid-September 2002 that intelligence reports a year earlier reiterated a consistent and constant theme, Osama bin Laden's intent to launch terrorist attacks inside the United States. That joint inquiry revealed that just 2 months before September 11, an intelligence briefing for senior government officials
predicted a terrorist attack with these words. The attack will be spectacular and designed to inflict mass casualties against U.S. facilities or interests. Attack preparations have been made. Attack will occur with little or no warning. It's a quote. Given the White House's insistence on secrecy with regard to what intelligence was given to President Bush, the Joint Inquiry Report does not divulge whether he took part in that briefing. Even if he did, it strains credulity to suppose that those senior government officials would have kept its alarming substance from the president. Again, there's no evidence that the president held any meetings or took any action to deal with the threats of such attacks. In all of these actions and decisions, President George W. Bush has acted in a manner contrary to his trust as president and subversive of constitutional government, to the prejudice of the cause of law and justice, and to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Wherefore, President George W. Bush, by such conduct, is guilty of an impeachable offense warranting removal from office. Article 34, obstruction of the investigation into the attacks of September 11th, 2001. In his conduct while President of the United States, George W. Bush, in violation of his constitutional oath to faithfully execute the office of President of the United States, and to the best of his ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in violation of his constitutional duty under Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution, to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, has both personally and acting through his agents and subordinates, together with the Vice President, obstructed investigations into the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon on September 11, 2001. Following September 11, 2001, President Bush and Vice President Cheney took strong steps to thwart any and all proposals that the circumstances of the attacks be addressed. Then Secretary of State Colin Powell was forced to renege on his public promise on September 23rd that a white paper would be issued to explain the circumstances. Less than 2 weeks after that promise, Powell apologized for his unfortunate choice of words and explained that Americans would have to rely on information coming out in the press and in other ways. On September 26, 2001, President Bush drove to Central Intelligence Agency, CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, and stood with the director of Central Intelligence, George Tenet, and said, quote, "My report to the nation is we've got the best intelligence we can possibly have thanks to the men and women of the CIA," unquote. George Tenet subsequently and falsely claimed not to have visited the president personally between the start of Bush's long Crawford vacation and September 11, 2001. Testifying before the 9/11 Commission on April 14, 2004, Tenet answered a question from Commission member Timothy Romer by referring to the president's vacation, July 24 through August 30th, in Crawford, and insisting that he did not see the president at all in August 2001. "You never talked with him?" Romer asked. "No," Tenet replied, explaining that for much of August, he too was on leave. An agency spokesman called reporters the same evening to say Tenet had misspoken and that Tenet had briefed Bush on August 17th and 31st. The spokesman explained that the second briefing took place after the president had returned to Washington and played down the first one in Crawford as uneventful. In his book, At the Center of the Storm, 2007, Tenet refers to what is almost certainly his August 17th visit to Crawford as a follow-up to the Bin Laden Determined to Strike in the U.S. article and the CIA-prepared President's Daily Briefing of August 6th. That briefing was immortalized in a Time magazine photo capturing Harriet Myers holding the President's Daily Briefing open for the President as two CIA officers sit by. It is the same briefing to which the President reportedly reacted by telling the CIA briefer, "All right, you've covered your ass now." Ron Suskin, The 1% Doctrine, page 2, 2006. That's the citation.
And at the center of the storm, Tenet writes, quote, a few weeks after the August 6th presidential daily briefing was delivered, I followed it to Crawford to make sure that the president stayed current on events. A White House press release suggests Tenet was also there a week later, on August 24th. According to the August 25th, 2001 release, President Bush, addressing a group of visitors to Crawford on August 25th, told him, quote, George Tenet and I, yesterday we piled in the new nominees for the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, the vice chairman, and their wives, and went right up the canyon. Unquote. In early February 2002, Vice President Dick Cheney warned then Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle that if Congress went ahead with an investigation, administration officials might not show up to testify. As pressure grew for an investigation, the President and Vice President agreed to the establishment of a Congressional Joint Committee to conduct a joint inquiry. Eleanor Hill, Executive Director of the inquiry, opened the joint inquiry's final public hearing in mid-September 2002 with the following disclaimer. Quote, I need to report that, according to the White House and the Director of Central Intelligence, the President's knowledge of intelligence information relevant to this inquiry remains classified, even when the substance of the intelligence information has been declassified, unquote. The National Commission on Terrorist Attacks, also known as the 9/11 Commission, was created on November 27, 2002, following passage of congressional legislation signed into law by President Bush. The president was asked to testify before the commission. He refused to testify except for 1 hour in private with only two commission members present, with no oath administered, with no recording or note-taking, with the vice president at his side. Commission co-chair Lee Hamilton has written that he believes the commission was set up to fail, was underfunded, was rushed, and did not receive proper cooperation and access to information. A December 2007 review of classified documents by former members of the commission found that the commission had made repeated and detailed requests to the CIA in 2003 and 2004 for documents and other information about the interrogation of operatives of Al-Qaeda, and had been told falsely by a top CIA official that the agency had produced or made available for review everything that had been requested. In all these actions and decisions, President George W. Bush has acted in a manner contrary to his trust as president and subversive of constitutional government, to the prejudice of the cause of law and justice, and to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Wherefore, President George W. Bush, by such conduct, is guilty of an impeachable offense warranting removal from office. Article 35, endangering the health of 9/11 first responders. In his conduct while President of the United States, George W. Bush, in violation of his constitutional oath to faithfully execute the office of President of the United States, and to the best of his ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in violation of his constitutional duty under Article 2, Section 3, to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, has both personally and acting through his agents and subordinates, together with the Vice President, recklessly endangered the health of first responders, residents, and workers at and near the former location of the World Trade Center in New York City. The Inspector General of the Environmental Protection Agency, August 21st, 2003, report numbered 2003-P-000.
Just astonishing stuff. As I've said a couple of times tonight, this was not on the menu for us this evening, but having had no forewarning by any network news outlet that such an introduction of such a resolution was going to occur tonight, we had to rely on the best source of news for this program, and that's usually our listeners. We'll be back right after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. about 9 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and Catherine Bay for the program tonight. Although it's been all Dennis Kucinich the entire night, he is on Article 35 of 35 Articles of Impeachment that he is introducing tonight in the U.S. House of Resolution. House of... Oh, my God. It's late. He is introducing to the House a resolution with 35 articles of impeachment. He's on number 35 right now, and that is the failure of the Bush crime family to take care of the first responders to 9/11.
Of the United States. Wherefore, President George W. Bush, by such conduct, is guilty of an impeachable offense warranting removal from office. I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. Under Rule 9, a resolution offered from the floor by a member other than the majority leader or the minority leader as a question of the privileges of the House has immediate precedence only at a time designated by the chair within 2 legislative days after the resolution is properly noticed. Pending that designation, the form of the resolution noticed by the gentleman from Ohio will appear in the record at this point. The chair will not at this point
All
determine
right.
whether the resolution constitutes
That's
a question
it. That's it. That's it. 35, it took Dennis Kucinich 2 hours or 3 hours and approximately 20 minutes. 3 hours and 20 minutes nonstop. I watched most of it on C-SPAN as we shared their audio with you. I saw him take maybe 2-3 sips of water. Very few screw-ups, just plowed right through it. It's just amazing to me to actually listen to someone present the reasons coherently and systematically why George W. Bush should be removed from office is almost overwhelming. To think that the United States of America has been in the hands of a criminally incompetent thug like Bush and Cheney for the past 7.5 years. It's astonishing. It's like the boiling frog experiment. Raise the temperature very slowly on the frog in the water. He doesn't realize he's dead until he's dead, as opposed to dropping him into boiling water. That's what's happened to us. And to hear Kucinich in a very detailed manner lay out 35 reasons, the articles of impeachment in this resolution, why this miserable bastard should be removed from office is, like I said, it's almost overwhelming. It's almost overwhelming what this man has done, Bush. What will be very interesting to me, maybe to you, is to let's together watch how this is treated tomorrow by other talk show hosts, primarily the liberal ones. Let's see how they do. We know what the right wingers, the 98.6% of talk show hosts, radio talk show hosts in this country, who are right wing neo Nazis. We know how this is going to be presented. Either not at all, or they'll talk about Kucinich saying at one time he thought he saw a UFO. You know that. As far as mainstream television is concerned, will they touch it? Will they even touch it? Let's wait and see. The newspapers of record around the country, Chicago Tribune, Miami Herald, New York Times, Washington Post, San Francisco Chronicle, L.A. Times, Houston Chronicle, Des Moines Register, Detroit Free Press, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, how do you think they're going to treat it? 35 articles of impeachment introduced in resolution form tonight in the U.S. House. Dennis Kucinich, now when he did this a year ago with a resolution calling for the impeachment of Dick Cheney, it was filed with the House Judiciary Committee. And nothing has happened. Absolutely nothing. Do you suppose that there is one single member of the House out of the remaining 434 who will stand with Kucinich tomorrow? Will there be 1, 10, 100, 200? Will Nancy Pelosi get a transcript of this and take a look at what her colleague has said? Will anything be done? Will anything happen? Anything at all? 35 articles of impeachment that clearly indicate the trashing of the U.S. Constitution, the destruction of the office of the presidency as one of three co-equal branches of government, the absolute creeping, incipient fascism that this administration has brought to this country. Is anything going to happen? Anything at all? We'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.